This summer, we're doing a series on the parables of Jesus. And so the reason that we're doing this series on the parables of Jesus is because they're great stories. I mean, Jesus tells the parables, these stories, because they have a spiritual purpose, right? There's some sort of physical thing that's going on, but these stories, in their simplicity, communicate spiritual truths to everyday circumstances. And so we want to be going through these stories of Jesus so that we're familiar with them, so that we might encourage ourselves and encourage others with these stories, so that you'll find yourself in an everyday situation and you'll think, oh, hey, this reminds me of a story of Jesus. And as I was thinking about everyday kinds of situations, I was this week reflecting on my experiences in college. I had grown up in the church and had spent a lot of time just in the church. My family was very straight-laced. And I went then to Washington State University for my freshman year of college. The fall after they had been ranked the number two party school in the nation. And when I got there, I found that there were, in fact, partiers in the dorms that I lived. And so, as it started at the beginning of the year, everybody found they had new freedoms that they didn't used to have at home, and they had access to alcohol and things that they didn't have at home. And they partied. And so, Friday and Saturday, TGIF, TGIS, thank goodness it's Saturday, we are having a party. And then it didn't take all that many weeks until they realized that Friday was really just a throwaway day. And so, thank goodness it's Thursday, because Friday doesn't really matter. And so they partied on Thursdays too. And by the end of the first year, we had Thanksgiving. Thank goodness it's Wednesday. Thank goodness it's Thursday. Thank goodness it's Friday. Thank goodness it's Saturday. And it was just one big party. Needless to say, I was not surprised or disappointed to find many of my friends fail out of school after the first year and not return in the fall. I was not gleeful, but smug. Because they really deserved it. And, you know, that reminds me of a story that Jesus told. If you turn with me to Luke chapter 15. And while you're turning there, I want to tell you this story before we look at it. Okay? You see, the story goes like this. There was a guy who had two sons. And these two sons were different than one another, and the one worked in the family business, and the other one came to his dad and said, "You know what, Dad? After you die, then I'm going to get an inheritance, and I'm not really into the family business thing, and so could you just give me some of that inheritance now, and I'll go kind of do my thing, because I'm not really into this." And the father went, "Oh, okay, here you go. Go do your thing." And the son went, "Thanks." And he took off. He went traveling. He went all over the place. He lived it up with his friends. He engaged in all kinds of things that are unmentionable in a situation like this. But he lived it up. And it didn't take him too long until he ran out of funds. And he didn't really have a way to get home. And so he just sort of went, I guess I'll go to work. And he found somebody that was willing to give him a little bit of work, and he worked feeding pigs because it was the job that he could find. And as he was feeding the pigs, he just was really in this desperate state. And you know how that happens sometimes, where you lose everything and you will take anything, right? And he was in that position, and he's feeding these pigs, and he's looking at the food that he's given the pigs, and he's like, "Man, I am so hungry, I could eat this." And even though he was in that kind of a position, nobody gave him anything. And while he's there and he's working this job that nobody really wants, and he definitely didn't want, and he's just thinking to himself, how did I get myself into this? You know, if I were back home, even if I wasn't his son, even if I was just like an employee or something in the family business, my dad would treat me better than this. What I will do is I will go home to my dad and I will say, Dad, look, I know I messed up. Would you just take me? You can disown me, that's fine, but could I just work for you? That's all I'm going to ask, is that I work for you. And he goes, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. And so he gets up and he leaves the pigs there and he goes home. And as he's coming home, he's sort of rehearsing his I'm sorry speech, because he just doesn't know how his dad's going to react. And as he's walking up the driveway, the dad sees him out the window and comes running out the door and just throws his arms around his son. And his son goes, look, Dad, I know I messed up. And his dad goes, come on. Brings him inside, gets everybody together, all the employees. They have a great big party. He puts the roast in the oven. He's got the bath going for the son. He's just, everything is all excitement because his son is back and has come home. And the other brother gets home from work. He's worked a long, hard day, and he gets home and he sees the sort of the lights on in the house and the party is going on, and he's going, what in the world? It's not my birthday. Checks his calendar. No special occasions. What in the world is going on? And one of the other employees comes out of the house and he says, hey, what's going on? Your brother's back. Your brother's back. We're having a big party because your brother came back. He came back? I cannot believe he had the guts to show his face in this place again. I am not going into that house. And the dad comes back out and he goes, son, your brother's here. Come on in. We're partying because your brother's back. He's home. He's safe. He's sound. No. Forget it. That loser asked you for his inheritance before you're dead and you gave it to him. He went and he squandered it. He spent it on all kinds of worthless stuff. Meantime, I have been working the family business for you for every single day. We don't get days off. It's a family business. I have not failed you at all. And what have you given me? There's not been any parties. I've never seen a party like this before. How come he gets a party? I am not going in because I've done everything that you've asked and nothing like this has ever been done for me. And the dad says, what are you talking about? You're always with me. Everything that I have is yours. The business is yours. Everything is yours. But it's appropriate that we should celebrate because your brother came back. In Luke chapter 15, this is how the story goes. You see in verses 1 and 2, now the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to him. And the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them. And so he tells two parables about things being lost and going and finding those and bringing them back. And then this third parable in verse 11, and he said, there was a man who had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me your share. Give me the share of property that is coming to me. And he divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread? But I perish here with hunger. I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion, and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, bring quickly the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us celebrate and eat. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. Now his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked him what these things meant. And he said to him, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf, because he has received him back safe and sound. But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him, but he answered his father, look, these many years I have served you, and I never disobeyed your command. Yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fattened calf for him. And he said to him, son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad. For this, your brother was dead, and he is alive. He was lost and is found. At the beginning of this parable, we see, what we see is Jesus eating and drinking with tax collectors and sinners. The people that you don't want to hang out with and the people that you shouldn't hang out with. Right? That's who Jesus is hanging out with. And all of the religious proper types are coming by and they're seeing him hang out with these people and they're going, what's going on? Why is he hanging out with those people? Why is he hanging out with that type of person? And doesn't Jesus know that he's a respected person in the church? Doesn't Jesus know that people look up to him and follow him as a teacher of the law? Doesn't he know that he's supposed to be upstanding? And why is he hanging out with these people? He should be hanging out with respectable people, not with people like them. And so Jesus tells these stories so that they would understand his purpose for coming. So that they would understand what it is that he's doing. And he tells these stories about things being lost and going out and getting them and bringing them back. Going out to find them and bringing them back. And here we see this story now of these two sons. Right? That's how this story starts in verse 11. And there was a man who had two sons. So right away, the only thing that we know is that this is a story about two sons. And right away, we see this younger one. We don't know anything about the older one yet. He's not going to come until much, much later in the story that we hear anything at all about him. But right now, all we know is this younger one. And this younger one is the kind of selfish, spoiled brat that you just want to have nothing to do with. Right? Here he comes, the younger one, comes to his father and says, Father, give me the share of property that is coming to me. Can you appreciate how ridiculously rude this is? Hey, Dad. Look, I'm not the firstborn, and I am not going to get the property and things, and I'm just going to get a smaller portion of the inheritance, and I don't really want to be here, and I don't really want to hang out with you until you're old and decrepit and dead. And so would you just give me the stuff that I will get when you're dead so that I don't have to put up with you in the meantime? How many here, I'm not going to make you raise your hand, but how many here would say, are you kidding me right now? How old are you? Do I need to put you over my knee? I mean, this is ridiculous. And instead, the father does it, right? He divides up his property and he gives some of it to this younger son so that the younger son can go. I mean, the offense of this, the offense within a family of somebody saying, give me my share of the inheritance so that I can leave. I'd be like, if you want to leave, get out. But you make your own way. Don't think that you're both entitled to leave and entitled to family rights of property. That's ridiculous. But no, this son is so bold and so dumb that he comes and he asks for all of this inheritance. And the father, who knows why, maybe he thinks he's been a lousy father and he's trying to make up for it or something, I don't know. But for whatever reason, he gives him the stuff and the son goes. And just like you would expect, he blows all of the money. It's gone. We don't know how long it takes. It doesn't say, right? It says, not many days later, the younger son gathered all that he had, went to a far country, took a journey. That sounds about right. And there he squandered his property in reckless living. That sounds about right, too. I don't know how long it took, but there it is. It's gone. And then we have a severe famine arises in the land. So he had lots of money. He went, he spent all of it. Now he's personally in a position that's not favorable, right? Right now he's got nothing left and he's in a place where the economy is really bad. Nobody has much of anything and he's got nothing. And he's got no support network. Everything's gone. The money dried up, the friends are gone, the parties are gone, everything's gone. And then if you are anything like me, and you're looking at your college buddies, and you kind of go, yeah, you deserved that. I don't know what you thought was going to happen, but to anyone with any maturity at all, that was predictable. And we see this, and the son ends up in this position where he's got nothing and he's begging, right? And he's humbled and humiliated and working at a job that no one wants to work at. And he's completely hit rock bottom. And I don't know what it is about rock bottom. And I don't know why so many people have to get there. But that's where he ends up. And it's there that he begins to think clearly for the first time. I don't know why rock bottom does that to people, but rock bottom does that to people. When everything's easy, you don't think about priorities. You don't think about what you have to do or what you should be doing. You just sort of do the next thing. When you're not worried about how much money you have, you don't care where it goes. But when you've hit rock bottom, it brings clarity to your thinking. So that he says in verse 17, but when he came to himself, that is, when he woke up from his stupor, when he became aware of what was going on in his life, when he realized how far down he had gone, that's when he started thinking clearly. That's when he starts thinking about what he had in the family that he left. That's when he starts thinking about his priorities. That's when he starts thinking about his needs. That's when he starts thinking about his goals and where he wants to go and what he wishes for his life, rather than just living it up. It's right there at rock bottom. And what he realizes is that in this place where nobody knows him, where nobody cares about him, in a place where there isn't prosperity, he's being treated as a hired hand and he's not being treated well by his boss at all. Nobody is giving him anything to eat and he's starving. And he says to himself, if I were to go home, even if he wouldn't take me back, even if my dad wouldn't take me back, I've seen the kind of guy he is. I've seen the kind of boss and employer that he is. And even if I just went back as one of his servants, I would get treated better than this. I would get to be home. I would get to be by them. And I wouldn't be starving to death because my father would take care of me. Even if he wouldn't take care of me as a son, even if he's completely disowned me and rejected me as a son, he would still take me back and treat me better than I'm being treated here. And so he gets up and he goes back home. And his one purpose in going back home is so that he will be treated better than he was there and so that he can tell his dad, look, I know it. I have sinned against heaven and I've sinned against you. I totally, totally blew it. And that's all he gets out when he comes home. The only thing that he manages to get out at all when he gets home is, Dad, I totally blew it. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. He doesn't get to the, but I've thought about my life and I've thought about what could come next and I've thought, you know, if you just hire me as an employee. He doesn't even get to that part. The dad, out of great compassion, comes running out and embraces and kisses his son. He's just so happy that the son came back. Now, I look at that from the dad's perspective. And I think about what it would mean for the dad to have his son come back. Right? Because in part, I read this story and I go, man, this guy's gotten soft in his old age. But in another sense, here you have a child that you have raised and taken care of, and you have grown them, and they have completely and utterly rejected you. They've just asked for your stuff, and they've left. And they have completely rejected you. And then, having found himself in need, he came back. He knew. He knew the Father would help him. He knew. And the Father knows, right? The Father knows, hey, he came back. I don't care about what happened before. I don't care about all of that stuff. What I care about is that he recognizes that I love him. And he's come back. And so when he sees the son come back, he doesn't want to hear all of it. He doesn't care about all of that. What happened or anything. He just comes out and he embraces the son and he just hugs him and embraces him and kisses him and says, you're back. Quickly, we've got to celebrate. And so the servants come and they put the robe on him and they put the ring on his finger and they put the sandals on his feet and they bring him inside and they have a celebration. Because the one who left, the wayward son, has come back and he's been brought back into the family. And there's all kinds of reason for singing and rejoicing and celebrating except for the older son. Right? Except for the older son. The older son comes home and he sees all of the partying and he looks around and he goes, what in the world is going on here? I don't get it. How come all of the festivities? And one of the other servants comes out and says, hey, your brother's back. That's why we're partying. That's why we're celebrating. And the older brother's going, what? How many of us can relate to that? He went out, he wasted everything, that worthless, no good son. He wasted everything. All he did was party. And when he comes home, you have a party? Does that seem just? Does that seem fair? Not even one time did I ask for a party. I didn't even get a little goat. I've just been here and working and doing everything that I'm supposed to do. The older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called to one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said, your brother has come. Your father has killed the fattened calf because he has received him back safe and sound. But he was angry and refused to go in. And his father came out and entreated him. Now, isn't this interesting? The one son left and came back, totally humbled and repentant, and the father ran out and embraced him. The other son stayed home, worked in the field, came back and refused to go into the house. And so the father comes out to beg him, please come in. Please come in. Please come in and celebrate. Please come in and see your brother. Please come in. No. No, I've been at home the whole time. I've done everything right the whole time. I'm not coming in. I refuse to go in the house. I've been in the house every day since he was gone. I'm not coming in the house while he's in the house. I can't believe you would give him everything and then when he comes back you would sacrifice a cow. When you haven't given me anything. We in the church have a tendency toward this. It's a self-righteousness. It is because I have been so good that I will not accept those who have been so sinful. It is because I have done everything that God has asked me to do that I will not accept those who have disobeyed Him. Look, these many years I have served you, and I never disobeyed your command. The reason he won't go into the house is because he's been so good. He has been working so hard. There's a great book by Tim Keller called Prodigal God in which he talks about this. And how each of these sons really is just after the father's stuff. All they want is the father's stuff. The one boldly comes and tells him, give me your stuff. And then he goes and he squanders it. The other one takes the appropriate route and works really hard so that he earns that. But when it comes to the embrace of the Father, that's not really what he's looking for. He's not looking for the love and embrace of the Father to bring him in to celebrate in the party. He's looking for the reward. He's looking for the stuff. I grew up being the example. It was who I was. I was the firstborn in my family. I was the oldest of my cousins, or one of the oldest of my cousins, and I did everything right all the time. I was the example. This is the way you were supposed to be. And I looked down on my other cousins who didn't. My cousins who listened to music that they shouldn't have been listening to, looked at magazines that they shouldn't have been looking at, talked about things that they shouldn't have been doing, went to movies that they shouldn't have seen. And I was the example about all of the ways that you should do it. I worked really, really hard at that. There's no room for mercy or compassion when you're living a self-righteous life. Because if you feel like you deserve the love of God because you have obeyed Him, there is no room for mercy and compassion to those who have not. There's no room for it. I cannot be compassionate toward the one who has squandered all of their money. If I have worked really, really hard at a job, and earned money, and saved up for a vacation, right? And I don't use credit cards, and I save all of everything so that I can pay with cash. And somebody else wants everything right now, and so they use that credit card, and they get themselves into credit debt, and they go under financially. It's hard for me to be compassionate toward them, because I have done it right the way that you're supposed to. And didn't they see that coming? And here's what we see in this story, right? Now remember, the context for this is that Jesus is sitting with tax collectors and sinners. And the Pharisees and religious people are walking by going, I cannot believe He is with them. And as He tells this story about these two sons, the one who's lost and the other one who's home, what we see is that at the end of the story, the one is home and the other's lost. The one is in the Father's embrace and being celebrated because he has repented. He's hit rock bottom and he's come back. But the one who has been home the whole time hasn't ever hit rock bottom and hasn't recognized his own need for the Father's love. Or the Father's love that is there. Because he's been there the whole time. And because he's been working so hard and his priorities have been all wrong. So that when he comes and he says, I will not go in, the Father says to him, Son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. You have been depriving yourself of joy. You have been depriving yourself of my love. You have been depriving yourself of all of the celebration because of your own self-righteousness. It is because of your hardness of heart that you have not enjoyed what you have had the whole time I have been right here. The challenge for the people on that side is having not hit rock bottom, recognizing the need for the embrace of the Father, not dependent on the work of the Son, but on the love of the Father. Dependent only on the compassion of the Father. That's how this parable speaks to me every single time. Every single time I look and go, oh, they don't deserve what they just got. They don't deserve that. Every time I cringe to see somebody making poor decisions, to heading down a wrong path, leading a life of sin, every time I cringe about that, I'm reminded of this. Because what that older brother should have been doing is crying for the loss of his younger brother. But instead, he's indignant. Because he's self-righteous. You see, when it comes to God, it is only through the grace and compassion extended by God that we can come to Him. We cannot work hard enough to earn the favor of God. I know, I've tried. Even when I was younger and things were much easier, I couldn't do it. I tried really hard. I was the example all the time, but there had to be an outlet somewhere because you can't do that. And so I was completely different at home and with cousins and in the church than I was at school. No one can be perfect all the time. No one can do it. No one can earn the favor of God. No one deserves the favor of God. No one has loved Him and honored Him, glorified Him, and obeyed Him perfectly so that they have earned it or deserved it. The only way that we can come to God at all is because He is gracious and compassionate and reaches out to us. And so whether you find yourself at rock bottom and beginning to think clearly for the first time and asking yourself, what is it that truly matters? What is it that I truly need? Or whether you indignantly and self-righteously look at others, whether having repented and coming back and feeling like they don't deserve to be able to come back, or whether they're still there and you just feel indignant about where they're at. It is a reminder to us that we need humility in our coming to Jesus. I think there's a false impression, right? I at least had this for a long time, that it's unfair if someone gets to party and then comes back and has a party. Because we don't recognize the difference between a party and a celebration. It's not fair that somebody gets to go live it up and do whatever they want and then come back and we celebrate that they came back. What we have to recognize is the difference between a party and a celebration is a celebration has a purpose for which we are rejoicing. A party is just a party for the sake of a party. And when you're having a party for the sake of a party, that's not actually joy. It's pretending. But when we're having the celebration with the Father, when we are in close, when we are in the house, then all that is His is ours. And we are always with Him. And there is always cause for celebration because of the relationship between the Father and His children. And so as you think about and meditate on this story, I hope there will be many opportunities for you to think, this reminds me of that story that Jesus told about the two sons. Every time you feel indignant about the way somebody else is behaving. Anytime somebody comes to you and says, you know, I just don't deserve the grace of God because. God can't love me because you don't know all the things I've done. You know, that reminds me of a story that Jesus told. Let's go to the Lord in prayer.